Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Wednesday, May 31st, 2023. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi, hi, hiya.
All right, BJ, let's dive right into the news today. First up, did Sony just promise a live-action Miles Morales movie is on the way? That's the question. I am not 100% sure of the answer because Variety is a weird outlet. So an article basically saying that Amy Pascal, the producer of several of the most recent Spider-Man movies and the Venom films and the two Spider-Verse films, was at the red carpet premiere in LA of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse last night. And evidently, the Variety interviewer asked her if a live-action Miles Morales movie was in the works, and she said, the quote from her is, "You'll see all of it. It's all happening." It's unclear exactly what the question was that that's the answer to, so it's hard to say with like 100% certainty that that's what she was talking about. Variety seemed to think that that's what she meant, that yes, there is a live-action Miles movie, you know, coming. It would certainly make financial sense for Sony to double down because of the popularity of the Spider-Verse movies and because Sony wants to just make as much money as possible, naturally. But also, like, you know, they have a ton of access to these spider characters and, you know, this would make a lot of sense. I'm just not like fully sold yet. I'm kind of in like TBD wait and see mode. But given, you know, the history of Sony and Spider-Man, BJ, what do you think about a live action Miles Morales movie? Do you think the world is ready for such a thing?
I don't know if the world is ready for it, because after what we've seen with The Little Mermaid, I think people are going to get real weird and real racist real fast, which is a shame, because I think if they did a Miles Morales movie, I would hope that they would just continue the casting of Shameik Moore, who voices the character in the animated films, because he is an incredibly talented live action performer as well. If you haven't seen Dope from 2015, what are you doing? That movie rules. I would love to see a Miles Morales live action movie. I think I'd be a little sad because I kind of like this animated world that he exists in, because it is so much better than the live action movies. But if we're gonna do it, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think it's a cool idea. There's more that Amy Pascal and some of the other spider producers were talking about on the red carpet, including a Spider-Woman movie that I think we've known since 2020. It was going to be directed by Olivia Wilde. And Amy Pascal also mentioned that, like, of course, they're going to be working on more Tom Holland Spider-Man movies. So that shouldn't really come as much of a surprise to anybody. What did come as a surprise to me, BJ, moving on to our next story, is that the director of the live-action Moana remake was announced, and it is Hamilton director Thomas Kail, who directed the, I guess that was like a live action, what would you call that? The stage adaptation, I guess, the movie version
it's
of
a
the stage
recording,
play.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That hit Disney Plus in 2020. He's a Broadway director who directed Hamilton. He directed Lin-Manuel Miranda's previous play, In the Heights as well. And he's like sort of a rising star in the world of Broadway, or maybe like fully established star by this point. But I think you're more tapped into that scene than I am, BJ. Do you have any thoughts about Thomas Kail?
Sure. So Thomas Kail, or as I like to call him, Mr. Michelle Williams at this point.
Congrats to him.
Congrats to him. He is mostly known for theater, but he is also a pretty solid, screen director. He directed some of the episodes of Fosse Verdon, the Ryan Murphy produced series. I think that's where he met Michelle Williams, actually. And it's very interesting. It's very stylistically cool to look at. I am curious how this will go for him, because Moana is a really adventurous sort of thing. I mean, even with Fosse Verdon, you're dealing with a choreographer and a Broadway superstar. There's a lot of stage work. So that, I think, is in his wheelhouse. But Moana, you've got water, you've got beaches. There's a lot of stuff going on here. That's a pretty big jump for him. I think that musically it'll sound lovely. I think the choreography will look fantastic. It's just the other elements that I'm like, I'm curious to see how this is going to turn out. But I think I think it might be okay. I mean, Julie Taymor is one of my favorite directors. She's responsible for the Lion King Broadway show. And she also made Across the Universe, which is one, I think, one of the most visually interesting films ever made. So I don't want to count him out yet.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I will say, BJ, that my heart sank a little bit as you were talking about this being an adventurous movie, because for some reason I just pictured a live action Moana shot almost entirely on the volume, which just kind of, yeah, is kind of a depressing potential reality that we could be looking at here.
Yeah.
Especially because, like you said, there's, you know, that might be a way to sort of ease Thomas Kail into the huge expanded scope of what this story requires. I don't know. I guess if there are a bunch of sequences where, you know, the characters are like on the water, on that, you know, floating, it's not quite a ship. What would you call that? A raft, whatever the floating vessel is. I could see some of that being shot on the volume. I just hope that they don't use the whole thing and like turn it into, you know, the sort of ugliness that we've come to expect from these live action Disney movies. Because Moana is like so visually stunning, you know, I just hope they're able to sort of transfer that over a little bit better than they have been able to recently.
Yeah, I hope so too. The way that I'm looking at it is that this has the potential to be something really beautiful and fantastic, or it could be an absolute disaster.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the Insidious universe, which is getting a sort of an interesting expansion in the form of a spinoff that is going to be called, what's the official title here? Thread: An Insidious Tale, which is going to be written and directed by Jeremy Slater, who was behind the Marvel show Moon Knight, and he also created the Exorcist TV show on Fox. We know that Kumail Nanjiani and Mandy Moore have been cast as the leads in this. And I think it's, you know, it's set in the same world as like the Patrick Wilson starring horror movies, but it's a whole sort of side story, I guess. It appears that like the lipstick faced demon is not going to appear here, because whatever haunts these new characters is going to be an entirely new, menacing creature. But I will admit, BJ, I've never seen any of the Insidious movies somehow.
Oh, I think you're like missing out.
The fifth one is coming out this year or something like that. They're up to a pretty high number already. But yeah, just for some reason, they just like slipped through the cracks and never saw them. But I know you're like a huge horror person. So what do you think about the Insidious films, the franchise as a whole, and then the idea of them doing this sort of side story like this?
I love the world of Insidious. It is one of my favorite, you know, more current horror franchises that have come out, because I think that it's the entire series kind of deals with this idea of the further, of like this kind of ghost dimension, and that there are certain spirits or entities that will attach themselves to people, which is why we see this lipstick face demon. That's the one that's attached to Patrick Wilson, or his son, I should say. It's attached to Dalton. But either way, we have these very distinct creatures. So the opportunities are kind of endless in terms of spinoffs and continuing stories, because there's always going to be some different weird ghost, demon, whatever you want to call it, that will attach itself to people. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's very smart that they're going to do these spinoffs, because I think Insidious 3 and 4 are prequel movies to the Patrick Wilson like main storyline that we see in 1, 2, and then upcoming in 5. And I think people were not expecting them to be different stories. So people were kind of thrown off, because they wanted to know, where is the lipstick face demon? Where is the bride in black? Where are these characters? And they're not really all that present. So now that they're like, nope, this is a spinoff. This is, you know, it's set in the same universe, but it's something totally new. I think audiences are going to be more willing to buy into it. I'm also so excited to see Mandy Moore make a return to horror. She hasn't really done much horror outside of 47 Meters Down, but she has been dealing with, you know, dramedies on TV. So I fully believe she can do it. And Kumail Nanjiani hasn't ever been in like a true to form horror movie.
Yeah.
And he's such a big genre guy that it just, this is a perfect fit for both of them, it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I feel like I did not watch any of This Is Us. It just was not really in my wheelhouse, but I feel like Mandy Moore is like an underappreciated screen presence. I remember really liking her in A Walk to Remember, which was what, 20 something years ago at this point. I thought she was great in Tangled. She was really good in Saved, that movie from 2004.
Oh, yeah.
And then also, there's a movie called Dedication that came out in 2007 that I feel like literally no one I've ever talked to has ever ever seen this movie or heard of it even. But Justin Theroux directed it, and it stars Billy Crudup and Mandy Moore. And I thought that they were both really great in it. So I haven't seen it since then, but I remember thinking, like, being really blown away by their performances in that movie. So yeah, I'm excited for them to sort of take center stage in like a what sounds like a pretty cool expansion of the Insidious universe. So
yeah.
Okay, let's take a quick break, actually, and then we'll be right back. All right, BJ, last couple stories. Art the Clown is coming back. Terrifier 3. This movie is now officially moving forward. I guess the Coven, the France-based distributors of the Terrifier films, have announced that the third movie, I believe, is going to be starting to shoot at the end of this year, like this winter at some time. It could come out as early as 2024 at some point. We know that the budget has been increased significantly from the $250,000 that Terrifier 2 costs, because that movie made, I think, something like $15 million on that budget, which is incredibly impressive. But as the non-horror fan here, I've not seen any of the Terrifier movies. I assume you have thoughts about Terrifier 2 and what you think that this franchise could go, you know, what direction you think it could go from there. What do you make of this?
I have such a respect and affinity for the Terrifier films, even though they're not super my bread and butter. The first one has like some moments in it that I was like, oh, that was really cool. And the practical effects are pretty fantastic, but the story itself is just, it's fine. It is what it is. But I am so impressed by how these movies have developed such a rabid fan base so quickly, and how they have cultivated like this very DIY or die grassroots almost campaign for their films that have obviously paid off handsomely. The second one made so much money, and it's like a 2.5 hour movie. It's insane how long the Terrifier 2 is, especially for a slasher movie, which slasher movies are like, you're 90 minutes if you're lucky. So the fact that this is so long is fantastic. I am so interested to see what they're going to do with a bigger budget, because Damien Leone, who writes and directs these movies, also does, you know, a lot of the effects himself. So I think with a bigger money, that means he could get a team. And I'm really fascinated to see what they're going to do with money. I hope that it just makes things bigger and crazier. I'm fearful that maybe it'll mean that they now have a money hose to fix problems with, rather than sort of this inventive nature that the movies are known for. But I mean, the Terrifier movies did really well at the Fangoria Chainsaw Awards recently, and those are voted on by fans. People love these movies, and they're gonna turn out to see more of them.
Yeah, Priscilla Smith, who works for the Coven, said in a statement, she said, there will be a much bigger budget this time around, which is intended to give the filmmakers more creative freedom and let them be as wild as they can be. And all jokes aside, we are going for that Oscar this year, which...
That's so funny.
Yeah, it really does sound like, you know, with the intense gore and the makeup and everything, that they might actually have a chance to do it if the Academy... you know, takes horror seriously, which, you know, that's a whole separate conversation.
Yeah,
but it certainly sounds like, you know, they're like going all out for this. And then Leone, the director, said, if you thought Art the Clown's Reign of Terror in Part 2 was extreme, you haven't seen anything yet. So
I love
just
that.
Not even fully knowing what happens in Terrifier 2 and just hearing the stories like second and third hand, that has me terrified, frankly, about like the level to which they're going to go in order to sort of like try to freak audiences out. Like I imagine people just like vomiting in the aisles, like a South Park episode or something. But
the way that I always pitch it to people is the way that we have sort of this language in general of like the Saw movies were like these extreme measures of horror. Terrifier does something similar where the kills are really unique and really fascinating, but there's also an underlying fun to all of it. So it is wild and gruesome and graphic, but it never really feels super mean-spirited. Like it feels like everybody's in on it. So it's a little bit more enjoyable and less like, oh, well, now I feel like I need to shower and I feel bad about myself for watching this.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. All right. So our last story involves something that I just can't even really begin to believe is real, but evidently it is. So during a Q&A at last weekend's Texas Frightmare Weekend, somebody asked John Carpenter, acclaimed beloved director John Carpenter, if Keith David's character Childs from The Thing who was last seen in that movie sharing a bottle of whiskey with Kurt Russell's character, was the creature, had been assimilated by the creature. And Carpenter dodged the answer a little bit, as he tends to do, but he also said something incredibly interesting, BJ. He teased the potential existence of the Thing too. He said, "I have been sworn to secrecy, okay, because there may be, I don't know if there will be, there may be a Thing too." And that was all he said, because they didn't really have, it wasn't really the venue to like go into full follow-up mode. It's sort of a Q&A, like ask your question, move on to somebody else's kind of thing. But I'm fascinated about what this could mean for the legacy of maybe the most beloved horror movie of all time, or certainly one of them. Huge Pandora's box here, BJ, but like, what do you think about the idea of a Thing too?
I have a couple of thoughts. One, I encourage everyone to read Eric Vespi's investigation on the ending of the original Thing that we published a few months ago. It is probably the most in-depth examination of that scene you're going to get. So John Carpenter might not have an answer, but I think Eric does. So highly recommend that. But in terms of the Thing too, I am not surprised that they want to make a Thing too, specifically because of how the Thing prequel series ended up, where that's the one with Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Everybody kind of forgot about it because it wasn't all that great. Like, it lost a lot of the heart by having a lot of CGI effects instead of practical monsters. But then after the movie was released, it was revealed that they had done everything with practical monsters and it all got scrapped. And everyone's like, what the hell? Why did you do that? We would have loved that. That would have made the movie. So I think since then, they've been trying to get a sequel or a prequel or another addition to the Thing universe. They've been trying to get it made, and it just hasn't happened yet. And yes, John Carpenter is known to kind of dodge questions and tease and whatever, but usually when he dodges questions, it's very much like, stop asking me this. It's not happening. I don't care. So the fact that he was being a little coy and a little playful makes me fully believe that this is actually happening. And if they're going to do it, and if they're going to be practical and they're going to bring back practical monsters, I am 10,000,000% for it. I'm also not against them bringing Kurt Russell back and being like old rugged MacReady. That would rule. Maybe we'll finally get the answer. Maybe they'll bring back Keith David as well. That would also rule. I'd be very stoked about all of that. But I'm trying not to get my hopes up too much, because horror as a genre also breaks my heart a lot with these sorts of things. So I'm going to be cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. The legacy of that movie is so, it casts such a long shadow because it's so perfect. It holds up so wonderfully well even today. A lot of that has to do with the practical effects by Rob Bottin. And it's just like this incredible time capsule kind of movie. But I do at the same time feel like there is the potential to do something really, really cool here, and something, you know, if they've been spending a lot of time thinking about this and truly developing it in like a serious way and not just as a sort of a cash grab recognizable IP kind of thing, I really think there's something, there's great potential with this. It's interesting that Carpenter has not directed a feature film since 2010 with The Ward, but he evidently just directed a TV show called John Carpenter's Suburban Screams completely remotely that was shot in Prague, and he just did it from home, which sounds very much like the current era John Carpenter. Like, that's right up his alley, because he just loves like getting high and playing video games all day, which like,
let him watch basketball, play video games, get high, and do some rock star stuff with his music. That's all he wants.
Yeah. So I don't know if like John Carpenter would direct the Thing too, or if he would direct it remotely, which is kind of just, I don't know if I could like fully wrap my head around that. But maybe, and maybe this could be cool. I don't know. I want to be positive about this. I don't want this I don't want to be cynical about this one, BJ. I want to love this. I want this to turn into a real thing. And I think you're right. I think because he is playing coy, There have been so many instances in the past where people have asked him questions about remakes of projects that he's made, where he's just like frankly come out and said like, I don't care unless they pay me. Like, right? That's the only thing that he cares about, is just like getting a check. And the fact that he didn't mention that at all and just said, I've been sworn to secrecy because maybe this is going to happen, maybe means that he's been paid already, or like, you know, they've at least talked to him about the possibility of paying him in some way. So yeah, maybe this is like closer than we think to actually happening. So that would be fantastic.
But, and I think, like, genuinely, I think this is kind of the perfect time for it, because a lot of the people who grew up loving the thing are, you know, this is like an IP that people would actually get excited about, because it doesn't feel like it's been done to death. But it's also just still like the themes in it are still so relevant, and how we don't trust each other and how things are so scary, and we question everyone around us at all times. Like, it just really feels like this might be the sweet spot. Like, and I really hope that it is.
Yeah. Especially like in the wake of, you know, the pandemic and every, like, I mean, not the pandemic's fully over, but like the idea of like how everybody was feeling in 2020, that sort of like looking at your neighbors askance kind of feeling that we all had. Anytime anyone coughed in public, people, like a million heads turned, like snapped in that direction, you know, like it's very, very much taps into those sort of ideas of the thing. So the only downside I can see here is that the ending of Carpenter's The Thing is so perfect that, like, picking up and actually answering the question or whatever in like a textual way might do something to tarnish that legacy. But maybe they don't bring Russell and Keith David back. Maybe they have like new characters and it's a new situation or something like that, and they're able to sort of continue the story in a way that doesn't necessarily undo any of the brilliance that they achieved, you know, back in 82. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm excited to track it here at slashfilm.com. So I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. But you can find more about all the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Google, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please subscribe to our newsletter, send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Tell your friends, spread the word. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you tomorrow.